has the right to tell what they do not want to hear. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? Then wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
Get the language right.
The government is in trouble.
After all, a bunch of slaves. Bunch of slaves.
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of media?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
The world burns. My name is S.M. Gibson, and you are listening to Anti-Media Radio, your alternative to the corporate narrative. It is December the 1st, 2015. Make sure to join us live every Tuesday and Thursday night at 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific at www.ucy.tv/TAMR. And you can always catch our replays on YouTube by searching for Anti-Media Radio. So far in 2015, 1,084 Americans have been killed by police officers. 116 police officers have died in the line of duty. 152 people have been beheaded by the government of Saudi Arabia, a country that we will be talking about at length tonight. And the city of Chicago has seen 2,757 people shot so far this year and 464 homicides. Joined in the studio, as always, tonight is Mr. Kevin Knight. Kevin, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, man. Good. Good to be here.
And Mr. Shannon Madden, our wonderful producer. Shannon, how are you doing?
Absolutely wonderful. You know, you brought up Chicago, and wanted to point out real quick, this is kind of one of the stories that's floating around, that Chicago's police chief was thrown out today after days of protest over the officer shooting of a black teenager 16 times. I don't know if you've any of our listeners have seen the video yet, but it is disturbing.
It's a gruesome video. To be honest with you, I'm kind of... But... You know, Rahm Emanuel felt the pressure, I guess, mayor of Chicago, and we'll see if there's any justice in the case. That's all you can hope for at this point. You can't go back in time.
The feds are supposed to be in investigating the way Chicago police do business, which is something that we've talked about on the show quite a bit with their black op sites around the city. Let's hope some justice is done. I don't know. I'm the cynic in me kind of believes that we're going to see more of the same, but the police chief stepping out is a step in the right direction.
Well, unfortunately, it's not just the police station either. It's, you know, we've heard a lot of talk, especially with both Rahm Emanuel and President Obama both coming out of Chicago. We've heard a lot over the years about the Chicago Players Club, the Chicago group of dirty politics that goes on. Apparently it's been going on for a long time, and it's pretty well known in the political world. So it's not just the police. I think by the time it gets to the police down to your local level like that, I think it's probably so saturated every other level of the city and state government that it's going to be hard to do very much just by tossing out the police chief, unfortunately.
Yeah. I want to go ahead and run down some of the headlines for tonight. There's so much in the news going on right now, I really don't know where to begin. Tomorrow, the UK is set to vote on possible airstrikes against ISIS in Syria. This is one day after the German cabinet approved plans to commit up to 1,200 soldiers in support of the international coalition. The U.S. also announced that it would expand its special operations forces in the region, including Iraq. Which leads us to the next headline. Iraqi Shiite militias threaten to attack Iraqi troops. Here's the problem with this is they are fighting for the Iraqi government against ISIS and have committed to attacking U.S. troops if there's an expanded role in the region. Right now there's about 3,400 troops there, 3,500 troops we still have, plus what the advisors, which who knows how high it goes up from there.
Right, of course. Yeah. And the other black ops guys, intelligence people that have probably been there for a long time, will probably never know that it even exists. There's probably no way to really even get any accurate numbers, even if the White House here.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting, the careful learning about the 200 new personnel that are to be, I guess, just get on a train and go over there, just go down the countryside, you know. No, there's nothing to see here. They're just personnel.
Well, and USA Today said that they were actually told by the same spokesperson that told the other source we were discussing that they were told between 100 and 150. So, and they've told some other news sources directly, so we're being told that there's anywhere from 150 to 200 on to 400. So they're playing word games, depending on who you ask, and depending on how it's said, I suppose. Anywhere, I guess, up to 400 could mean 150 and 200, and they, I guess, would probably claim they weren't lying. But
again, well, it might be 150 on one plane, 200 on another plane, 300 right. on another plane. The next thing you know, we have 4,000 new personnel.
Right.
So we're in Iraq. So what we're saying is we have the U.S. putting more troops over there. We've got Germany pledging troops to go over there. We've got the United Kingdom voting tomorrow to start airstrikes in the area. We've seen Iranian-backed Shiite militias fighting in support of the Iraqi government, vowing to attack U.S. troops if they announce a new deployment plan. And we have Turkey, which is probably the biggest news of everything right now. Kevin, I know you were reading about this earlier, and tell me more about it. Tell everybody kind of what's going on right now with Turkey.
I'd like to mention something before we get too far into Turkey, that also Japan, I don't know if you saw, but they just announced that they are very much considering sending troops in, which is a big time deal for Japan, being, you know, the more of a pacifist country. But they actually had some of their citizens that were actually held hostage and decapitated back earlier this year. So that's really caused a big uproar in Japan. And despite those actions by ISIS terrorists, Japan still has a lot of people that are really up in arms, are really adamant that, hey, Japan does not belong in this fight. They don't have a dog in this fight. So I think that's interesting. It's adding another element to it. But, you know, Turkey's a NATO ally. And Russia, of course, getting involved. Now we've seen what they're doing. But for a long time, we've had a relationship with Turkey where we want to have them a part of NATO. But, you know, it's almost like the Pakistanis that we give so much money to, and then their Pakistani ISI turns around and funds various things against a lot of Americans. So it's really getting worse and worse as time goes by.
I tell you what, while we're on the topic of Turkey, I want to bring a guest on the show right now, somebody that we haven't talked to in a while. One of our wonderful journalists here at Anti-Media is Claire Burnish. Claire, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderfully. How are you?
I can't complain.
My name is Claire. I haven't heard from you in a while.
It's been too long.
Far too long.
She's out there on the West Coast.
She went and moved out on the West Coast and forgot all about us little people.
That's
wow.
it.
Yeah. I had to escape to the sunshine, so.
Nothing wrong with that.
Okay, no. So we haven't gotten to it into it yet on the show tonight, but we were just talking about Turkey. Tell us the news we woke up to this morning.
There's so much going on in Turkey, I'm not even really sure where to start. For one thing, there is a lot of censorship going on. And the censorship is not typical paranoid government censorship, in my opinion. It looks like there are journalists being censored and, you know, very prominent journalists, the editor-in-chief of an opposition paper and one of his correspondents were arrested on charges of espionage because they essentially found the same thing that an American journalist found a year ago. The American journalist's name was Serena Shim, and she found that essentially Turkey and some non-governmental organizations are basically assisting ISIS by allowing extremist rebels to cross back and forth over the Syria-Turkish border, and it's like arms and supplies, and they're helping to ferry oil for ISIS. Now, I'm going to say that with, you know, kind of a disclaimer that that has not been absolutely proven, though it looks from reports by both Shim and the journalists that were arrested for espionage that they had proof. And the government, of course, wanted to censor that because we're not supposed to know that. So things are kind of getting heated over there. With the thing is with this oil accusation that the oil is being helped out by the Turkish government, the Putin actually made the same accusation, and Erdogan, Turkey's president, basically said, "Prove it," to Putin, and we have yet to see that he has proved it, but that's what he said that he saw.
And Claire, he's even went farther down, to my understanding, and actually suggested that he'd be willing to actually step down as president if, in fact, those accusations could be proven. Considering the ties that his son and both he have with ISIS's oil business, or supposedly, if that proof is brought forward, is that something we can actually expect to see? Is the president of Turkey just stepping down, or is that just...
I think it's a lot of hot air because, for one thing, it seems pretty likely that it can be proven. But Serena Shim lost her life in a very mysterious, quote-unquote, mysterious car accident after she found this information out. So it seems as if, you know, Erdogan will do anything to prevent that information from getting out. So the challenge to prove it is kind of almost a farce.
Right. I mean, that makes sense. You know, Putin was, a lot of this stuff about oil and Turkey's involvement really kind of came to a head or got some press when Putin actually showed pictures at the G20 of these tanks, or at least described what he said is looks like a human oil line that's nothing but trucks all the way over the horizon that are constantly running day and night, day and night, day and night.
Exactly.
Through Turkey.
Exactly. And it seems from what happened a year ago when Serena Shim was killed, she had found some of that same footage, and she'd found ostensibly NATO or UN forces helping, you know, perhaps helping this happen for ISIS. And if that's the case, then this is a very serious accusation. So for Erdogan to come forward and just say, you know, prove it, I don't think it's far off from being proven. But he's not going to step down if somebody comes forward with pictures. They're going to make some sort of claim that it's not true, or they're find some way to censor it. In looking into what's been censored in that country, we found that there are over 160,000 websites that have been, you know, essentially taken down by the Turkish government.
Including the antimedia.org.
Well, we've been restricted over there, and, you know, there's a bunch of debate. Like, yes, it comes and goes over there, but when I last looked, it was blacked out. So, you know, it just kind of is a hit or miss thing. And it basically, like any censorship for the government, it matches whatever their agenda is at the moment. And if we're saying something that they don't like, then they are going to make sure that people can't see it.
And all this, too, comes a week after Wesley Clark, the ex-NATO Supreme Allied Commander, said that ISIS is serving the interests of Turkey and Saudi Arabia in the region.
Indeed.
And this is the same guy that a few years ago said there's seven countries and the United States had a plan to take them all out, and Syria was on the list.
Yeah, Yemen.
Exactly.
Yeah, several different countries. Iran.
I wanted to bring up one other thing, too. There's a Washington Post article today that said that Iraq does not want the U.S. helping in the fight against ISIS because we're helping ISIS. So,
well, of course,
I'm going to look into that.
the troops we're about to put in there, that we were invited. That's, of course, the line from the State Department.
And that could be even just from some rogue official that calls himself an official, you know, just kind of whispered, hey, you guys should come down sometime. And, you know, I imagine it doesn't take a lot at this point for the U.S. to send forces in there, whether or not for honest reasons or not. I don't think it's a big surprise. But, and I'm not surprised Iraq would not want the U.S. in, even despite their actions with ISIS. You know, I'm sure Iraq, they don't want to see another, I'm sure they don't want to be the home and the kickoff of World War III, considering where Russia and Turkey and the U.S.'s NATO ally is involved with that. No surprise.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's so much going on right now, and there's, you know, this enormous refugee crisis because we're bombing over there, and, you know, our allies are bombing over there, and we're not necessarily going after who we say we are. You know, it's kind of almost for show when we bomb ISIS, because what we're really doing is trying to depose Assad.
Well, speaking of which, I don't know if you heard the former deputy director of the CIA did an interview with Charlie Rose, and he defended the fact that the United States does not bomb oil fields owned by ISIS is because the CIA cares about the environment.
Yeah, I really had to just laugh out loud at that.
That was just not true. We care about the environment. You know, they don't care about which humans they kill, anything like that.
I'm speechless half the time anymore for what the dialogue they try, the paradigm they try to get us to buy is just so absurd. It doesn't even, you can't even make it make sense if you try. I mean, we're helping like the oil flow over there. We're helping, you know, we prop up oil companies over here. We do all of this stuff with all of these fossil fuels all over the world. And yet we're going to suddenly claim that it's the environment that we care about, you know. Who is really going to buy that?
You know, Joe Biden himself actually said this has not been mentioned very much. I don't know what you're seeing. Are you seeing much on the on any of the media sources that you're keeping an eye on? Are they mentioning much about the mainstream media here questioning Turkey's role in this oil trading deal? I see it on blogs, but I don't see it actually on any of the mainstream media.
Right, not really, although it seems almost as if the tide is turning. It's almost as if the propaganda has gotten so absurd that nobody can really put up with it anymore.
I'm not surprised. I am surprised. At some point, I will say this now, it won't be long until Fox actually goes back and pulls the tape, and Biden actually gave a speech to a good-sized group of Harvard students back in 2014, where he actually said that Turkey's president and Turkey are aiding ISIS with millions of dollars in training and weapons. And, of course, not too long after that, Biden, of course, apologized for that comment. But that was said, the comment was made and buried, and we've not heard any other mention of it. So the administration knows, obviously.
I had to include that in the article because I thought that was pretty funny because, you know, he said that, and then immediately he had to come back and basically retract his statement. You know, of course he did, because he was speaking the truth, and you can't have that.
Right, and a lot of people probably just pass it off as Crazy Joe doing what Crazy Joe does, just talking off the cuff.
Right, exactly.
And they can use that excuse with him forever.
Oh, yeah, they can't really.
I don't know if you heard, too, Claire. I know we were talking earlier today about the 50 executions that Saudi Arabia is planning on carrying out, they're saying, of, you know, people that have been convicted of terrorist crimes. Well, Al-Qaeda has now come out and threatened Saudi Arabia. If they do this, they said, we swear to God our blood will be shed before the blood of our captives, and their pure blood will not dry before we shed the blood of the soldiers of Al-Saud.
Okay, well, you know what that just immediately brings to mind is really interesting, because now that we're arming Al-Qaeda in our quote-unquote fight against ISIS, that's very interesting because Saudi Arabia is supposed to be our ally. So now we're arming both our ally and our ally, and they're going to fight each other. So who are we going to pick on our side? You know, when we play every side of the coin, eventually it's going to come back to bite us.
That's it. And then I don't know if you heard, we mentioned beginning of the show, Iranian-backed Shiite militias fighting in support of the Iraqi government against ISIS is vowing to attack U.S. troops in Iraq if the U.S. announces a new deployment plan. So we're talking Iranian-backed Shiite militia. We're talking everybody getting involved at this point.
You cannot make this up. I mean, and you can't really explain it either. It's almost as if we need to have an ongoing whiteboard discussion with, you know, the players. It's almost like this incredible farcical game that's being played, and none of it makes sense, and none of it's doing anybody any good. And in the meantime, all the civilians are just dying in droves and being forced out of their homes, and it's really just sickening to me.
And the U.S. and even the U.S. media does a great job. The Saudi Arabia has a huge propaganda arm. No surprise there. That really worked to tamper down any of Saudi Arabia's involvement with not just the 9/11 attacks for the 28 pages, but even their terrorist efforts and backing efforts in Syria. It was not in 2013. Saudi Arabia's government actually pardoned some 1,200 death row inmates. And as long as they would actually go to Syria and actually train these guys to be jihadists to fight up against the Assad regime. So Saudi Arabia, you know, they are, you know, there's not a whole lot of difference between if ISIS and Saudi Arabia, at least their government, the way that they run, at least what they strive to uphold as far as their political system. But yet, that's one of the U.S.'s, I dare say, bigger allies, even more so, I would even say, maybe not to this point, but getting closer to even being more of a partner than Israel is.
Yeah. You know, and also what comes to mind here is that it's like the worse we are, like the U.S. government is in its involvement around the world, trying to make its own, you know, agenda, trying to secure its own agenda, the worse we play both sides of the coin, the worse characters we get in bed with. I mean, there's Saudi Arabia. We're excusing, like, terrible human rights in Saudi Arabia. We're excusing it in Malaysia because of the TPP. We're basically excusing it with Al-Qaeda by arming them. I mean, what are we going to do next? It's like, who really is the terrorist here?
That's the thing. I mean, we're funding both sides of it. When you, what you mentioned earlier, talking about when we're funding Al-Qaeda, and then they're going to be fighting Saudi Arabia, who we're funding. I mean, we're just funding war, and whoever fights is welcome to fight.
Yeah, eventually, in my opinion, it would not surprise me if everybody kind of wised up and just started attacking the U.S. I mean, there's only so much we can do. There's only so many people we can play for our own agenda before it just comes back to bite us. That's what I just keep thinking.
Well, I think, too, though, is because we see, you know, the United States over there right now, they're not trying to win a war. If they were trying to win a war, they could win a war. I mean, the technology has advanced to that point. They're just over there piddling around, you know, kicking stuff up so everybody fights each other. I don't think the U.S. right now is trying to be engaged. I think that'll change once the election happens. But right now, we're just trying to have everybody fight amongst each other. And then when the Republican comes in, we'll go in and do whatever we do.
Yeah, I agree. I think that will definitely happen. I mean, considering our military is like, you know, more than the rest of the world combined or whatever, there's no way that we wouldn't defeat ISIS like right away. And yet we've been fighting them for a year, supposedly. I no.
Yeah, I don't know. People can see through the propaganda now. I don't think there's many people buying it. Of course, there's still some. There's always going to be that. But I think the majority of people are waking up to what our foreign policy really is, which is, you know, nothing other than go fight, go kill people.
And you would think that at this point that the more Americans would be pushing and more reluctant to sponsor or to push forth with another big government military strategy. You would think at this time, if there's ever been a time in the last 30, 50 years that we would, you know, that Americans would urge the need to draw back to literally, you know, almost pick up our balls and go home. And to sit back and watch hesitantly on the balls of our toes, on balls of our feet, but be hesitant, but just going in and we're not helping the situation anymore, if not making it worse. It's just going to be more of a quagmire. You know, when is this going to stop? You know,
well, that's a good question.
Does this go?
But also, like, that's, you know, with terrorists happening, then we have a renewed reason to fight, quote-unquote, terror, or basically to impose terror, but, you know, that was our new reason. It's like, in solidarity with France, we must go forth and crush ISIS, which, of course, means we're mostly killing, or whoever is bombing ISIS is mostly killing citizens, civilians, and innocents, and it's just, like you said, it's a big quagmire. It's a total mess. And eventually the truth is going to come out, and it's not going to be pretty.
Speaking of killing civilians, just last week, the United States approved a sale of $1.3 billion worth of missiles and bombs to Saudi Arabia to use in Yemen, of which 2,500 civilians have been killed since March.
Roughly half the whole the total count
yeah.
of deaths.
There's been about 5,700 deaths in the entire war, and over 2,500 which were civilians.
That's crazy.
850 somewhere in there, women and children.
I mean, do they want terrorists? Because
that's,
know,
that's how you get
them. This is how you get them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so sad. I mean, what this comes down to is this is really pathetic, quote-unquote, foreign policy that does nothing but meddle the U.S. in foreign affairs we don't belong in at the cost of so many innocent lives. And, you know, people are going to stop tolerating it after a while.
See, you get the impression, okay, well, obviously these people are doing this for greed and for money. But at some point, this isn't about money anymore, because all these people have all the money in the world as it is. This is sociopaths in control here. Saudi Arabia has all the money it would ever want and ever need. They're not meddling for money purposes.
You know, you'd think Saudi Arabia would want you know, as much as they export terrorism, you would think that they would want to be more in favor of exporting terrorism away from their region. You know, not, you know, why overthrow Assad and put in jihadists that are going to be taking aim at the Saudi kingdom before too long? You know, it wasn't a couple of years ago where Al Qaeda posed a little bit of a threat, or was supposedly, that was the narrative that's being played, actually was posing a threat to Saudi Arabia's kingdom. So you'd think, you know, that Saudi Arabia would kind of push that a little further away.
I think, though, that Egypt showed us that if they don't like the leader that they put in, they can just go ahead and change him out real quick.
Right, right.
Because the same thing happened in there after Mubarak got put out.
That's true, but also Saudi Arabia, you know, of course, as long as we're their ally, they feel like they're invincible because we have this enormous military budget and might behind them. So what are they scared of? You know? I mean, nobody's fighting in Saudi Arabia right now. It doesn't look likely to happen. If somebody goes to attack Saudi Arabia, you know, the U.S. is their ally, so that's really not going to happen.
That's it. I mean, I think the U.S. would react to that just like they would react to somebody attacking Israel.
Or just like mm-hmm. they did when Saddam went into to Kuwait. You know, how quickly Operation Desert Shield turned into Desert Storm. And it turned to a defensive action for Kuwait into a full-scale war.
Yep. And really, honestly, with everything that's going on right now with, you know, Turkey downing the Russian jet, that's a whole other story. Everything is looking like the march to war right now, and I don't know if it can be stopped, you know?
The drums are beating louder and louder every day. But I tell you what, thank you so much for calling in this evening, Claire, and being exceptionally informative as always.
Thank you for having me. It's been a long time. I hope I can call in again soon.
Yes, ma'am. Hope to talk to you soon.
All right, have a good night, guys.
You too. All right,
thanks, Claire.
Well, Shannon, you were unusually quiet during all that. What's your take on this entire situation?
First off, you brought up something, too, that, you know, all of this is kind of dependent upon our next election. And that, you know, just listening to all of this and imagining President Donald Trump making the final decisions in all of his affairs.
Yeah, right.
How horrifying of a thought is that right now? You know, he's leading the polls very comfortably in the GOP right now.
It's scary. It's scary.
He's hovering around 29%. He's edging Carson out by like 9 or 10.
Here's the thing that's scary about it. He has done every single thing he can do to be out of the race. No one else would have survived saying the stuff he said, making the comments that he's made. The crazier he gets, the more people love him. Who are these people? Who are these people that like Donald Trump?
They're your neighbor that's new to voting, that's probably not registered to vote, which probably they won't even think that they need to be registered. The day that the election comes, they'll realize that they're not registered to vote.
Hopefully. But what is he like? What's he saying that appeals to people?
You know, that some of the people that I've met are actually, you know, your old GOP hardliners that are, and he's what he's speaking is music to their ears.
Oh, I'm sure. I have no doubt that it is. And it's also, most of it is the opposite of what Trump himself has said over the years. Be it,
said what, in 1998, 1999, something like that, he said if he ever ran for president, he would run as a Republican because they're the stupidest group of voters, and they'll believe anything I say. He says, I can lie to them the whole time.
He was still a Democrat up until the last
he was a Democrat, then he was an independent, and then he became a Republican. Tell you what, let's go ahead and grab a caller here. Area code 407. Welcome to Anti-Media Radio. This is your host, S.M. Gibson. Tell us your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Yeah, this is Steven from Orlando, Florida.
Steven from Orlando, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well, and I think that it would, as per your last comment, it would be worth the while to check out the demographics of just who is supporting Donald Trump. And I haven't looked at it in depth, but just from what I've seen, these are working class Americans that are basically solidly middle class to lower middle class in their 40s and 50s and 60s. And like all of us here, they've been bombarded with propaganda from cradle to grave. They're confused. They see the, everybody's saying that the economy is doing just fine and but the lived experience of people have less money. They see a browner complexion of this society. They see interracial relationships in commercials and television shows, and they're confused and they're angry, and this is what Donald Trump is playing upon. And I agree with you. It'd be like, wow, he's like talking about doing kind of like Nazi stuff with respect to, undocumented.
Yeah, and let's have a database for Muslims. Let's, have surveillance under mosques. Let's, watch everybody in the United States. Let's build a wall because that's what's going to keep us safe. Because I think the demographic that you're speaking of, they are very easily controlled by fear. And the more you tell them that they are being threatened, the more rights that they'll give away.
Yeah, and it's a very low information meme, and it's actually gotten. I'm 52, and it's actually gotten a lot worse in this country about the sound bites. People don't read in-depth articles and papers like they used to. Mm-hmm. The Twitter thing, so. We've seen a fractal development of demographic. People are divided into these little niches and groups, and they go onto media and blogs that confirm their own biases. And so we have a lot of different like little niches and cliques and stuff like that. That's really become defined in this age of the internet. Now, I wanted to make a couple of comments about this thing about Syria, which relates to what I just said about the, we've been bombarded with propaganda. it's really weird. The whole Syria thing has been so weird and how it's developed. And it wasn't until I met a local Syrian family, and they're Christian, and I talked to them, and they're like, they support Assad. And I started looking at, you know, the media doing some in-depth research. And just like the woman, Claire, just said, she's very eloquent, and she's got a handle on it. We've been sold this bill of goods that, you know, Assad's evil, he's barrel bomb. Actually, Syria was one of the governments in the region, and I'm not saying that they don't have authoritarian tendencies. There's been a lot of crimes done by the government, but actually, in whole, it was a non-sectarian, multi-confessional society where you could be from whatever religion, you know, as long as you supported the state and you didn't like engage in like extremist stuff, then you were all Syrian, right?
Ironically, more liberal than someone like Saudi Arabia.
Bingo.
Yeah. And the way they demonized Assad, you know, the barrel bombs, I hear all of these commentators from left and right saying that it's Assad that drove all of these people out. No, it's been the people that United States, France, Qatar, UK, we've been funneling and supporting mercenary jihadist extremists, Al-Qaeda types, to go terrorize communities. And then we're playing a double game. So we're supporting these so-called moderate rebels, and their goal is to do regime change against Assad. And then at the same time, we're pretending that ISIL, you know, the Islamic State, ooh, they're a big bad boogeyman. You know, they start taking over territories in the more rural desert areas. These are generally communities that are Sunni, and so they take over, and if somebody takes over your community like that, you're going to be on their side. You're going to say Assad sucks, and of course, just to survive, right?
Right. Yeah, and a lot of these towns too are shifting alliances back and forth depending on who's got control at the same time. So it's no surprise that the various villages are finding themselves on opposite sides of the conflict from time to time.
Yeah, and it's a weird demographic too, because just like in the United States, people that live in these smaller communities, they tend to be just like here, that you're kind of like skeptical of the big city folks. You know, you've got your religion, and I don't necessarily think that they're for ISIS, you know, the Islamic State. They've just been taken over. They want to survive, right? And, you know, the nastiest thing about this, I think that behind all of this is the situation with Iran and Syria forming a bloc with Iraq. And there's going to be a bloc that develops there that is going to be counter what United States domination in the region. And this is a Shia bloc. And but like I said, you know, the government of Syria, they're like, they want to tamp down any of these sectarian character characterizing the struggle with that. But what I think is really interesting is that the United States, you know, I love my country, man, but man, we're on the side of Dr. Evil on this one, man.
No, we're not. But that is an important distinction. But we're not. You know, and that's something I think that a lot of us have to remember when we're speaking to other people, because I know I'm sure you probably get this a lot too. People that question you and think that you somehow hate your country because you criticize the actions of the U.S. military that belongs to the U.S. government. But no, yo, I understand exactly where you're coming from, but
yeah,
we're right to call it like it is, though. It is a government run amok.
Yeah, you're totally correct. You're totally correct. And but when I hear... But people are figuring this out, because I heard this old painter, you know, I do work in construction, and he was talking to his buddies, and he's like, wow, we're supporting Turkey, supporting ISIL. You know, I just heard him blurt that out. So, man, people are just seeing this. And one last thing before I hang up, what I think is very, very interesting in this is that France and Germany, okay, they're going to be coming involved. Now, I just can't conceive how the United States, Obama and them, get France and Germany, if they get in the theater, right, how they get them to turn on Assad and Russia. I just don't see how I don't think that Merkel and Hollande even they would be skinned alive if they turned it around to be a World War III scenario against Russia. So I'm looking at how this plays out. And you know what Obama just said recently today? He made a warning to Putin. Oh, you don't want this to become another Afghanistan. Actually, that was a communication directed to the Russian people. See, they're so bad. They're so much in a corner that they're trying to, like, warn off Russia from continuing to support the Syrian government. And by, like, hey, he's actually communicating to the people of Russia to play on their fears. But I see the United States, just as this kid continues to go, the United States is actually the one that's painting themselves in the corner. And they're losing the total script on this one. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And I just hope cooler heads prevail, because we need to have a planet that's not nuclear, not nuked, so we can have some beauty and future generations can continue living, you know? So this is serious business here.
That's it. You said it. Thank you so much for the call tonight, Stephen. And, please call again soon. We're going to jump to another call right now, area code 719. Welcome to Anti-Media Radio. This is your host, S.M. Gibson. Tell us your name and where you're calling from tonight.
My name is David Bryant, and I'm calling from Colorado.
David, what's on your mind?
I'm not exactly sure what I was calling about. Exactly, I'm not sure what this is. A radio show is calling up. I saw my buddy posted a thing that said you stay out of our country and we'll stay out of yours regarding Syria. Stay out of theirs.
Yeah.
So I'm a disabled veteran. I'm an 80% disabled veteran. I served in Iraq back in 2006 through 2008.
So, given your experience, what is your take on everything that's going on over there right now?
Okay, so back in 2006, I had a real eye-opening experience. I consider myself to be a conservative patriot, okay? But when you're sitting in an airport going home on R&R right before Christmas and you just left the country, was bombed all to hell except for all the contractors that are building up new facilities and dumping tons and tons of money in there, and all you see is that you're babysitting, you know, Halliburton and all these other contractors that are there, and you're sitting in the airport and the CNN news is talking about it. If we build an embassy in Iraq, we're going to be committing to 10 years of war there. And you're like, if they build it, it's already built.
Right.
You start to question your reality a little bit and start to look a little deeper into things. And, you know, as a soldier, they teach you to look at things objectively and be a student of history. It's required to be a good leader. You have to know the past. You have to learn from the mistakes and wins from other people. You can't just, you know, take the good stuff. You got to learn from the bad stuff, too. So I started looking deeper into our American history and found out, you know, about the central banking debacle. And do you know who Edward Bernays is?
Yes.
Okay. Propaganda. So, you know, exactly. Found out, you know, the father of propaganda and public opinion, you know, happened to be, you know, working for the United States government at the time that the central banks are buying into the country. You know, okay, so we say, you guys can't be robber barons. They say, okay, no problem. We'll just buy your country. Okay, and then we go to war, and the Nazis use Bernays' stuff to figure out how to control their populace. And then they say, hey, you know, these guys didn't have everything wrong. The trains get there on time. You know, things run efficiently. They make a shitload of money. And speaking of money, we made a shitload of money off this war. Well, how can we keep doing on that? Then we keep on going with the history of war that follows on and on, and people lobbying and paying money and paying into the government, going in war profiteering. And there's two knowledges. There's a knowledge for the middle class and the lower end people. just like Bernays writes, you know, you give them just enough stuff, and then you give them somebody to fear, and then you tell them it's their patriotic duty to hate that person, and you got them lining up in droves for a volunteer army to go fight your war for profit. Okay. And when I found out I was a part of that system, I had a major breakdown.
Tell me something, what you saw being in Iraq. What was your experience like? Did you see a bunch of people that were clamoring to be freed? Did you see a bunch of people
What I saw was police tactics. What I saw is what we do here in this country is what I saw. What we do here in places like Detroit, where you have police criminal corruption. And, you know, I was training the guys that are now working for ISIS. Let's not beat around the bush about it. I trained the guys that are supposedly who are fighting now, or we're supporting them so that they'll fight Assad. But, you know, we trained these guys to fight. And we left them a bunch of stuff there, trillions of dollars worth of it in Baghdad for them to fight with. This is a corporate war for profit, that whole thing. They're the KKK with corporate funding. That's what ISIS is. So, and, you know, and I helped train them. That's what I experienced in Baghdad. I went there and I was training the police force where, you know, I had a friend that got killed right outside of the police facility where he was going and staying for days at a time to train guys. You know, like nobody, so he goes back and then comes back a few hours later and nobody at the guard gate saw somebody plant a bomb. My fucking ass, you know, they weren't there working for us. They were there working for them, and somebody else was paying and lining their pockets and building them up so that they could go and delve further into the Middle East. Syria and Baghdad are Poland. That's what they are right now. And the fascist nation and a communist nation are fighting over oil. That's exactly what's happening there right now. It's no different.
Go ahead.
It's no different than back then. It's just, you know, they assimilated into our culture. I mean, Operation Paperclip, we hired 1,000 Nazis. You can't tell me that a few of them didn't get a good paycheck out of the United States government and, you know, buy back into the capitalism. You know, it's we traded, you know, the lesser evil for what we thought was liberty, but turns out we got something a whole lot different.
That's it. And here in Alabama, we have streets named after Wernher von Braun in Huntsville, who is a member of the SS.
It's funny. I was giving the coworker today the whole spiel today on exactly what you guys are talking about with von Braun and Paperclip. You know, Daniel, you're in a very unique position having gone to war and having to see this stuff firsthand. And obviously, let me ask you, do you feel like you're in the minority when you talk to your other guys, your other buddies that have been in the service? Do any of them feel of light mind?
A lot of them feel the same way. Nobody wants a war. You know, young men go fight old men in war. And, you know, I've been out, you know, of war now for a decade. So it's one of those things where I know what's coming. I can see it coming, and I don't want, you know, 18-year-old kid going off to fucking fight to line somebody's pockets again. And we've pretty much all but ensured that that's what's going to happen. You know, with this operation in Turkey, what I see happening there is strategy. I see them ineptitizing the United Nations. They're making them less of a credible, you know, a resource in there. And, you know, Putin's undermining them by lifting, you know, how many of the countries supported ISIS that are a part of that. You know, besides that, they're taking it and they're making it two sides. Both sides are pushing it, and it's really only one group of people that's doing it. It's just people profiteering on it. You know, the investors, you know, people that invest in like OxyContin and things like that, where, you know, oh, we're invading Afghanistan for what? Well, the number one poppy producer in the world. What do you think we're invading Afghanistan for?
Man, you know, Daniel, you've made some great points. You're probably one of the more knowledgeable veterans that I've actually been able to speak with, at least through any medium other than face-to-face. You know, we need you out there. I hate to ask you to keep fighting another war, but, you know, your service is in the information war. We need you guys like you that are calling programs like this and actually educating those around you. And I, for one, can't thank you enough for calling in tonight and for sharing your take on all this tonight.
No problem.
Thank you so much.
I've been trying to reach out into my communities and everything here. I've been out on street corners in the last, you know, couple of weeks since all this stuff started ramping up. I see military operation ramping up is what I see, and I don't like it. So I've been out actually basically shaming people into, okay, well, if you're going to use me as a as a tabloid for, oh, well, what about our veterans, when you don't want to accept, you know, Syrian refugees that our country helped create. You know, I don't know how you guys stand on that, but, you know, not all those refugees are bad people, and I'll tell you right now, we owe a few of those people a safe haven, because a few of those people are coming here from Baghdad.
We push
Baghdadis into Syria, and we created the Syrian conflict. We completely created that by our unjustified invasion of Iraq. And then being there pushed them into Syria, where they were then subjectified and basically turned into slaves. You know, they were turned into illegal, the way we treat illegal immigrants here. We pay them, you know, for the same wage, the same work, half the wages. And the people that were there outnumbered the people that were in the country in the first place, and they said no more. So then you got a group of refugees that turned into a group of rebels. Okay, so those rebels that are now fighting against Assad and his government and everything like that, yeah, he's unjust and everything like that. He's not a real good guy. But on the other hand, he wouldn't have had that situation. He's just a shitty guy in a shitty situation. You know, he wouldn't have had that situation to deal with if we had not been there in the first place.
And the thing that's so frustrating to me is that we deal with the refugee argument, and yet Americans do not realize that the only reason they are refugees fleeing a war-torn country is because, just like you said, we created the war-torn environment.
Yeah.
And yet,
you know, the other side of that is it doesn't really make a dent. We don't make a dent when we take in refugees. There's literally billions of people over there. We barely have a billion people, or a couple billion people here, maybe. You know, like, it's just the numbers over there are unfathomable for most people, the amount of people. It's just people on top of people, you know. You come back overwhelmed for a reason. When you're in downtown Baghdad, there's like a million people stacked on top of you. It's ridiculous that you can't even hardly walk, let alone drive around in downtown Baghdad. You know, and it's just all those people had to go somewhere because both of those countries are blown shit. They have no infrastructure and no resources to speak of, because the places that do have resources are occupied by terrorist forces that we trained. So it's one of those things where the war has already started, and it came home. I felt like I brought it home with me, which is why I'm a little different than most veterans. You know, I feel like I brought it home with me, and I have I'm honor bound to, like, take care of it. And, you know, like, there's a reason. I feel like there's a reason that there's 22 a day. I feel like there is more than one guy out there that feels like me, but we all feel inept. We feel unable to deal with the situation that's happening in the world right now, but That's not how I do it, and I plan. If there's any veterans that are listening to this, you can find me through Facebook. Can I give my Facebook information over this? Facebook.com/David, David, Michael, Michael, Bryant, Bryant, all one word, no spaces. You can find literature and information and reading on there on all sorts of different issues, both sides of the fence, because there isn't really a side of the fence. It's all an illusion. You know, and the sooner people get their heads around the fact that it's all an illusion, that there is no party in control of anything, it's they push the public opinion one way or the other way, and whoever gets in office, it doesn't really matter, because the guys that are getting paid by lobbyists in Congress are the ones that are putting all the roadblocks up and making all these big changes, like the TPP and, you know, Citizens United. If we don't get rid of those stuff, we're going to lose our country for sure. It's one of those things where it's absolutely essential that people exercise their freedom and liberty at this time, or we're in big trouble.
That's it. I tell you what, thank you so much for calling in tonight, David. Fantastic call. Please keep up the good fight, and thank you for all that you've done, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, you wish you could have somebody like that call in every single episode.
Gosh, I mean, you know, and the perspective that he's able to lend, actually being there, boots on the ground, and coming back home. I mean, you know, we've kind of had to arrive at this conclusion, I don't know, maybe sideways. You know, this is something that he actually was there in the middle of and saw with his own eyes.
Right.
And had to do.
And that's a similar story. You know, we've had Kelvin on the show quite a few times, who served over there. And that's pretty much the same story that he's given us. There was no reason to be there. There's still no reason to be there. And the turmoil has been created by our presence.
Man, that's probably one of the better calls that I've heard in a long time. A lot of good information that I'm sure is new to a lot of people out there, all packed into that, 10, 15-minute call at that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good information. I hope if he's still listening, man, I hope you do seriously consider or find another venue to get your word out, because you're very knowledgeable and it seems like you've got a good head on your shoulders. Obviously, a great head on your shoulders.
A great story to back it up, you know.
Yeah. So, just with a few minutes here, kind of like we do at the end of every episode, what are our solutions? You know, what's going to fix this? What do we do?
Two words: vermin supreme.
The boot.
The boot on the head, vermin supreme. You'll get a free pony out of it. But
Systematically abolishing the government the minute he's elected. I don't know. It sounds more and more lucrative every single episode of the show that we do.
Man, you are still not off the vermin supreme ticket.
Hell no. Have you seen that man? He's on the ballot in New Hampshire.
Speaking of presidential candidates. Hopefully we'll be talking to Jill Stein coming up pretty soon. So
that'd be awesome.
Look forward to that.
From the Green Party, for those of you who are not.
Presidential candidate, she ran in 2012.
Right.
She's running again in 2016 as the nominee for the Green Party. So
she was a co-signee on our lawsuit with Libertarian Party and a few others to sue the presidential election debate commission. Excuse me.
And also, we've got another few other guests that we're going to keep the names quiet right now, but some big guests coming up soon. So look forward to that. Yeah, who could it be? Who could it be? So, Shan, Marco Rubio,
oh man,
Donald Trump, Jeb Bush. Who's it going to be? Who's the guy going to be?
Well, you left out Ben Carson. Ben Carson currently has a very healthy standing at second. The money, of course, the corporate money is backing Rubio.
That's it.
Speaking
of Rubio, I wanted to read this tweet out real quick from Congressman Justin Amash. Tweeted this out yesterday.
Oh, this is good. Yeah, good.
I've missed zero votes out of 4,777 in office. If I skip votes at presidential candidate Marco Rubio's rate, I would have missed 2,360.
Drop some mic.
And you want to be our latex salesman?
Oh, that guy.
That's what we're dealing with. That's what we're dealing with.
It's right now. I mean, it's all Trump all the time.
Cruz's name not even being mentioned.
No.
Cruz, you know, his name was Ted Cruz.
Who?
Who's that? What?
Ted Cruz. I know about Carson.
Obama
Trump. Who are these other people they are talking about?
I think they finally figured out that Ted Cruz is born in Canada or something. I don't know. I don't think he showed his paperwork. So,
yeah.
Birth certificate. Ted Cruz birther.
Yeah.
Except he didn't deny that either.
He doesn't deny it. I'll give him that. He doesn't care, though, because he's running for president of the United States. So
regardless.
He doesn't
care. Which apparently he can't run for it.
I still believe if Trump somehow ends up with the nomination, and we all – maybe that's what it is, because I think Ted Cruz could be
– VP.
His VP, and maybe this is a huge claim by Canada. They've sent a Canadian down here to get some, you know, a bigger population, get some more tax dollars going up there, get some Americans to move to Canada.
Cruz.
Yeah, I like that. I'm sticking with
that. I think the only logical running mate for Trump at this point is probably Carrot Top. I mean, you know, really, yeah. I mean, if we're gonna go Trump, and we're gonna go the full nine, let's go the full nine.
Oh, I think you go
complete comedy.
Trump Palin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that would be a train wreck.
Power couple.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what, thanks, everyone, so much for joining us tonight. Thank you, Kevin and Shannon, for being in studio. Thank you for all of our callers. We will be back on Thursday. This is SM Gibson with Anti-Media Radio out.
He's in the bed. I'm
through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo, stereo.